This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
My name is Abdullah Al-Andalusi. As my name suggests, I'm from an Andalusian background, Spain and Portugal, more specifically Portugal. I grew up in London. I was born and raised in London. I went to a normal primary school growing up in central London. My school was nearby and it was a predominantly Christian school. It was Anglican, and I celebrated Christmas like everyone else. Easter, I participated in all the things that people do in the kind of a typical British household. Religion kind of played a nominal role in my family life. My mum was a Catholic, and my father was secular in his outlook and how he behaved. And so my mum had these kind of traditions that she took from kind of a Catholic upbringing. I would pray every night before going to sleep, the Christian Lord's Prayer, and I've always done so since I was, up until I was a teenager. And there was no consideration for any religious strictures or any religious viewpoint. It was just this very vague, be a good person, but no guidance as to what being a good person is. Now, I could follow society, and society would say a whole number of things which are contradictory. I realized when I was younger, much younger, that following what society told me to be good, can lead to life's frustrations. And just even being sometimes an honest person or an open person doesn't always work out for you. And it's like sometimes you have to lie to get ahead. Sometimes you have to manipulate other people, and I really disliked that. I really disliked seeing that, and I kind of asked myself, is this how human beings were intended to live? The hysteria, the prejudice. Sometimes good people are blamed in society, and in that sense, being a good person was very ambiguous to myself, because I saw good people doing bad things, and I realized that, well, there must be something wrong here. Surely there must be something more to this. And so this kind of, in a way, began my journey to trying to understand the truth behind reality. I was a very strong believer in Christianity. I used to be obviously worried about going to hell, being a bad person. I wanted to get to heaven. I was taught that at my school, but I think one day it kind of dawned on me that there are different religions around the world, and if I was born in another country, I'd be a different religion. So does geography dictate my belief? Does geography dictate what is truth? So in that, I started to ask myself that, how do I know what's the truth? Maybe I'm following the wrong religion. So what I did was, I left Christianity, and I still kept my belief in God, but I was going to try to find what the correct religion was, or the correct belief, or the truth, or whatever it might look like, wherever it might be. So so I was devout as a normal Christian, but I never believed that Jesus was God. But no one ever told me that Jesus was God. It seemed to me, when I was reciting the hymns in the Mass, that Jesus was a special person, that he had a special title called Son of God, but he wasn't God, because there was always Jesus, and then there was God. You see, and you see in the Bible, there's Jesus, and he prays to God, and there's God, and there's Jesus, and they're in two, they're two different persons. And so I set upon myself on a very ambitious project for a 11-year-old. And that was, I would research everything I could find from human knowledge, everything that was currently known, and deduce or decipher some kind of truth out of that, to find the truth, the hidden truth, the code, so to speak, out of all everything that human knowledge knows. So I got into science. I got into researching every kind of religion and cult you can think of. So there's Buddhism, Jainism, Hinduism, Rastafarianism, Mormons, Moonies, various Christian cults in the American Southwest. You name it, I read it, I researched it. In fact, it was quite odd, is at the time, I didn't think Islam had any kind of truth to it because it seemed so simple. It was so simple, I thought, no, the truth must be some deep, profound, mystical idea. It can't be so simple like this. I'll put it to the back and I'll go through all these mystery cults. The more mysterious, the better. As I kind of went on in my research, I noticed there were certain holes and gaps with all these different beliefs. And I know I was very young, but there were some very, very kind of very blatant contradictions which I encountered. So for example, I was researching Buddhism. And the concepts which I encountered with Buddhism was that, you know, the purpose of our life is to escape suffering by reaching enlightenment. And I asked, okay, what's enlightenment? Oh, enlightenment is when you know man's purpose in life. But if my purpose in life is to reach enlightenment, then enlightenment is knowing one's purpose in life, then I know it. But I'm not enlightened. Or am I? And these were the kind of problems which I encountered. And I just said, okay, I discount that. And I went through, again, as I said, Christianity seemed like just a bunch of assertions which weren't backed up by any evidence. And Judaism seemed very focused on the history of one particular race throughout time. And I was looking for something that was more universal, that applied to all human beings, that all human beings would be equally under. And then I bumped into Islam. And the thing I bumped into Islam was the hijab. Yeah. But you see, the nihilist would be the unbiased atheist on the panel, so to speak, because he's like, yeah, it does. There is no morality. There is no inherent meaning to anything. Why don't you atheists admit this? My fellow atheist brother, why don't you admit it? Embrace the truth. There is no truth. Yeah, so a good friend and brother of mine is Paul Bilal Williams, and I've known him for some time. How long has it been? It's
been 5 years, I think. Yeah, long time.
Yeah, I think we met at as some brothers having a dinner together in central London, and they introduced me to him as a new revert to Islam, and so we got on, and as reverts do.
Well, my name is Rahan Ullah. I'm a researcher with the Muslim Debate Initiative, and this is an organization which Abdullah and Paul Williams set up to promote Dawah, Islamic Dawah work, and apologetics. I didn't know about them until 2 years ago, and there was a very high-profile debate with a Christian evangelical scholar from the United States who had come to do a debate with Abdullah in a church, and I was really impressed, and I came up to these guys afterwards and asked if I could get involved, and took it from there. When I first came across Abdullah, I was very impressed with how approachable he was. He was tireless for the Dawah. And he was actually, I was surprised to find, well-known around London, because he's always invited to sort of circles, he's invited to universities to participate in interfaith dialogue or debates, and he's just really puts in so much effort and time for his dawah work, and he makes a lot of time for other people who want to get involved and to get us up to speed and get us out there and also involved in the dawah. So he's a great motivator as well.
Like many reverts, when we became Muslim, we wanted to share our beliefs and discuss our beliefs with other people, as many people as we can. And part of that, we involved us going out, and we'd go to places in London like Speaker's Corner on Sundays to debate and with all the people, all the kind of strange, kind of wacky people you can find there. And we did this quite a lot. And the kind of questions we'd receive from Speaker's Corner, from online, from books, we'd make us go back and research. And we'd research a lot about our faith and belief. And it came to a point where we thought, well, why don't we organize something? Why don't we come together and become organized? We have, a lot of us have expertise in a number of fields of Islamic learning and Western philosophy and various other, specialisms. And so why can't we all come together and use these expertise to engage the wider public? Get intellectuals who are non-Muslim, who are atheist, Christian, or secular, whatever, and hold a public debate where we can invite people and they can see us debating and the people can make their own minds up when both sides are presenting their case, like a court, and the people become the jury. And also, at the same time, we can encourage people to openly discuss their ideas and openly engage. We wanted to do this because some people thought that they can't talk about Islam, and other people thought that Muslims don't let you talk about Islam, and both are wrong. You can talk about Islam, and you can discuss and you can criticize Islam, but in a fair platform, you should be able to accept criticism as well, and let's have an open, frank debate about these things, and kind of get rid of these misconceptions that pervade our society. And so because of this, we set up the organization called the Muslim Debate Initiative. And it was me, Paul, and a number of other brothers. And we've been hosting debates or doing lectures at universities, in churches, in mosques, to kind of help get people thinking, help get people debating, help get people discussing with each other. And we want to make these kind of events very popular in all communities, because everyone should enjoy debating. Debate allows you to hear questions you wouldn't normally ask yourself. So isn't this something that people need? I think people desperately need is not answers, they need questions. That comes first. One of the first things I saw with Islam was the women's hijab. And it sounds quite odd to say that, but I saw women wearing the hijab, and I just asked myself a question, which was, why does Islam want women to wear hijabs? What's the significance of this? What's Islam trying to achieve? What is the aim that Islam is trying to achieve? And that's a question that I don't think very few people, ask themselves. It's unfortunate. And so I started to kind of query this, and I looked into this. And I thought about it, and it seemed to me, that there was a particular intention behind this. And at the time, I was on the TV. There was this show called Ally McBeal, which is a very strange, wacky show, about a neurotic working woman. And it showed that she was a lawyer, and in the place where she worked, there was a lot of sexual tension, a lot of sexual politics. It was every single show was about this. And of course, to some degree, obviously what I could see in my life was this kind of, it was backed up to a maybe a more limited extent, but still there was this sexual tension, sexual politics. And so it seemed to me that Islam's intention was to try to regulate and prevent sexual tension from society so that people could actually go and cooperate and do work together professionally without this silly sexual tension or all these problems. And I thought, wow, that's actually quite profound. Islam's objective for this. And then I thought about it, I was like, what, this is the only religion I've encountered which seems to have something to say about society. And since society is part of human life, then surely if man has a purpose in life, then that should have relevance to their life and to society. And this is when it started to sound to me that this is exactly what I should expect from religion, from my belief in the God, and I always have believed in God. So this is perhaps my first encounter with Islam, and it left obviously a lasting impression. Yeah, so today we're going to go to the mosque, Regent's Park Mosque, or London Central Mosque as it's otherwise known. We've got an event today, a big debate. We've been planning it for a couple months.
It was arranged with a Christian speaker, a reverend, and a colleague of mine in MDI called Paul Williams, otherwise known as Bilal. And they're going to do a big debate. It's going to be a very amicable one, very friendly one. We wanted to kind of use it to open up the Muslim-Christian community to increase dialogue and discussion, and, you know, and a robust and frank, open discussion. So Reza Park Mosque is quite an interesting venue, especially because I can't remember, I don't think anyone else can remember, any time where it has actually held a debate. And they've had many interfaith kind of events down there, but never actual a public debate. So this is actually really quite interesting for a Central London Mosque. So it's going to be a quite interesting day. I'm looking forward to kind of seeing hopefully a mixed audience. We've been trying to call out to the Christian community to come and attend and see their side speak and our side speak and have a mutual discussion between. It should be okay. It's going to be hosted in the library. And also the great thing about Central London Mosque is obviously it's in my area, and it's always kind of been my local mosque from when I was when I first converted to Islam. It's not necessarily the closest place to pray for me, but because it was quite big, and because it was had quite a diversity of Muslims there, especially converts or reverts like to go there. So it's actually had a little place in my heart for many years, and so I'm actually quite happy that to mix one of my interests, which is dawah and debate, and my kind of local mosque. So that's quite good, and hopefully we can continue this in more mosques. We've done it in other mosques before, but we'd like to hopefully continue more debates and events with Christians and atheists and others at many other mosques. So this is quite hopefully a very interesting day, and we'll see how it goes. Alright, just park up somewhere then. Yeah. But we need to offload a lot of stuff, so if you could park up somewhere near by. Welcome to everyone for coming, and thank you for coming to an event hosted by Regent's Park Mosque, otherwise known as London Central Mosque, and the Muslim Debate Initiative. My name is Abdullah Al-Andalusi. This is a very interesting event for myself on salvation in Christianity and Islam. I was a pre-Christian, an Anglican Christian many years ago, and now I'm Muslim, so I've had a foot in both faiths, you could say. I would just like to say that it's very good that these events can happen. Debates between Muslims and Christians can occur. I'd like to remind everyone of the first debate in the mosque ever to occur, which was 1,400 years ago, when the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam invited Christians from Najran into the Prophet's mosque, the first mosque ever built, where they debated. The Christians disagreed with the Prophet Muhammad on some of his points, and they left amicably. And not only that, but the Prophet Muhammad invited them to pray and use his mosque for their prayers, for Christian prayers, in the mosque. And some of the Muslims there was shocked by this. But this is the Prophet Muhammad's sunnah. This is his way. So continuing the Prophet Muhammad's tradition and sunnah, it's very good to see that these events are happening and happening very amicably. And inshallah, they will continue today amicably.
I embraced Islam at 14 years old. And it was strange because it seemed like a personal experience. And what I mean by that is there was no one else in my area that I knew who was Muslim. And there's no mosques in my area. And it was just it really did feel like in the almost absolute sense of the word, a personal and individual decision. I was alone in this. I was interested in Islam. I was very interested in Islam because of my first encounter with the idea and the concept of the hijab. But that led on to me looking at that Islam that is a holistic system. It seems to answer every aspect of human life, human organizations or society, human psychology. It answered the phenomenon of the universe, or rather, I would say, you know, the human existence and our encounter of this with this universe. So human, you know, being born, a finite life, a mixture of pleasure and suffering, reproducing, all these phenomena. Islam provided this meaningful narrative. And I was a skeptic at heart. I'm a natural skeptic. So the way I kind of interact with something is I try to disprove it. That's how I do it. I try to find holes in Islam's beliefs. I try to find inconsistencies or irrationalities. I try to find maybe some aspect of reality which Islam couldn't explain. So it's the equivalent of a person who, you know, believes that the earth obviously is flat, and then you say, well, the earth is round, so your belief it can't be right. And I was trying to find some evidence from reality that disproves Islam. I was really struggling so hard. The more I tried to disprove Islam, the more Islam gave me answers. And the more these answers were more profound, and then the more they made even more sense. And it just, in a way, was a process of elimination. All the belief systems from Jainism, Buddhism, Christianity, and atheism, all these other belief systems that are based on blind faith, just weren't consistent. There were many holes and gaps and problems within their worldview, and a lot of them didn't have a worldview. But Islam had a very consistent worldview, and it made rational sense. And I think I, like many other converts that I've encountered, we embrace Islam because it quite literally nothing else makes sense except Islam, and it answers everything beautifully. I'm not an emotional person when it comes to choosing what I believe, because emotions can lie to you, they can deceive you. But rather, it made very strong, dare I say perfect, intellectual sense. And this is why I felt that I have to call myself a Muslim, I have to be a Muslim. And then I had no one, I didn't know any Muslims, and at this point I was in secondary school. So I didn't know any Muslims to actually tell me what to do about with Islam. I was reading a lot about what Islam says in its theology, not so much about ritual practice or things. I wanted to know the concepts of Islam, what Islam actually believes, rather than just the details of the practices. So when at the time I wanted to become a Muslim, and I felt I'm gonna be a Muslim, I didn't know actually how to. I didn't actually know that you had to say a shahada to be a Muslim. And my equivalent of my shahada is me coming into my house and meeting my mum and saying to my mum, you know, mum, you know what? I think I'll be a Muslim. And maybe my mum thought it was a fad. Maybe my mum just thought that, you know, kids and their phases. And she goes, okay, son, whatever you want. And that was it. That was my shahada. No pomp or circumstance. It was just as casual as that. Only, I think later on, I learned, obviously, as I started to get into Islam and learning about the kind of the practices of Islam, then I learned that about the shahada, that you had to say it. It wasn't sufficient. It wasn't just, oh, so as long as I believe this sentence, then I'm a Muslim. It was, you have to testify it, because that affirms your belief. And so that was my shahada.